And welcome back to Speak Up Las Cruces. For the next half hour, we're going to be talking about child, not healthcare, child care in New Mexico. New Mexico recently became the first state in the nation to offer child care to all residents. We'll be speaking with Valeria Holloway. She has 24 years of experience as an early childhood education professional. And MJ Lord, she is a teaching assistant at A Child's Garden Preschool in Albuquerque. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Valeria, let me ask you first, for people who aren't familiar with the legislation, just saying that we're going to offer free child care for everybody sounds great, but when you get into the nitty-gritty details, how is all of that going to work? What does the legislation provide?
But they did do the funding. I believe it was like $750 million. I'm not really sure of the number. But that's over a course of 5 years. So.
And which children are covered by that? What ages? And are there any restrictions?
No, it would be birth to 12 years old.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was also after school care for.
I didn't either.
Yeah, for children. Does everybody qualify, even if like a parent is not working or not in school? I was under the impression that the child care was to incentivize either work or education.
I'm not really sure about that, but. I'm under the impression that you have to be doing something.
Okay.
But I'm not really sure what the other thing is. But before Universal, it was just you had to be going to school or being working.
Okay. That's, and I think now that you, I think now it's just open to everybody. That's my understanding. MJ, is that?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you a little bit about, well, first of all, what is our situation right now in terms of availability? I know it's different from one community to the next. Can you talk a little bit about that, either MJ or Valeria?
So availability as do you mean pertaining to?
Yeah, so I'm a parent.
Availability, like for families.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's like something that we are struggling with. I think just a little bit. The workforce has always struggled to maintain workers, and keep a strong workforce. A lot of centers often don't have enough teachers to cover proper state ratios. And if a center is participating in universal child care, then they have to keep those state ratios. So it's a certain amount of kids can have to be with like a certain amount of teachers. And that's not obviously not something that all centers can cover. It's something that is a struggle, especially in rural communities. Like Tucumcari, I believe, is a rural community in New Mexico, obviously. They only have about 2 to 3 child care centers in their area, and those child care centers constantly have like 700 kids on the wait list at all times. So accessibility is, I think, one of the main struggles of universal child care right now, because, I mean, with the term universal child care, you really want it to be universal, like, and available to everybody.
Yeah, so they're pumping all of this new money into the system. Can you talk a little bit about how that will help in areas like that, to provide care that they don't have now?
Yeah, so, sorry, do you want to talk about that, Valeria?
Go ahead. I'm good.
Okay. So they're going to give money to these communities to open centers and like reinvigorate the workforce. Obviously, within the universal child care bill, there was a pay increase for early child care professionals, and centers are required to pay their workforce a minimum of at least, I believe it's $18 per hour. So the next step is really getting these centers open and getting more teachers and educators interested in the workforce and in the field.
Are there educational qualifications that early childhood educators have to attain?
So that varies, I think, center to center. For most centers, I believe you need an associate's or a bachelor's to be a lead teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Most TAs aren't required to do any. There is some accreditations, like if a center is NACE accredited, then all teachers have to do professional development hours and like a 45-hour course before they start the job.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, there's really not many, there's not really anything stopping anybody from getting into the field, at least. I started with, I had no prior education and just took that required 45-hour like online course. And now I've been teaching for 3 years.
Right.
As a teacher's assistant.
I'm curious, what kinds of stuff do they cover in the 45-hour online course?
Oh, sorry, you cut out just a little bit. Can you repeat that?
Sure. What kinds of stuff do they cover in that 45-hour online course?
Yeah, so they mainly just talk about, I think, policy, how to interact with children, how to deal with emotional regulations. That's like a big focus. And how the child's brain develops, and how you use their current developing like to create your classroom or your learning centers, so that it's there. We have age appropriate classrooms.
And I'm curious, what do either of you know, the situation in Las Cruces in this area? I'm sure it's not as bad as Tucumcari, but do we have shortages here that you're aware of?
Shortages for workers?
Well, yeah, both. For both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes. I get a lot of personal, I get a lot of calls asking if I have space open, and I do have a network of providers that are all over the state to see if they have any openings, and we haven't been able to, we've been able to fill some, but not all.
Sure.
And then we just refer them to the, and this is only like 35 groups, but in Las Cruces, I probably only have like 15 women here. Or educators here, so I refer them to the NewMexicoKids.org website where they can put in their specs and then what they want, and then it'll pull up daycares all across the entire, not just Las Cruces, but all over the city.
I know the legislation was just passed this year, so obviously it's going to take a little while for all of that to play out. Have they started distributing any of the money that yet? Are you aware of that? Or I guess a better question is, how long do you think it will take before all of that money is out to where it needs to be, and we're seeing the full impacts of this bill?
So everything works on the fiscal year. So the money that they allotted in this last legislation will not go into effect until July 1st. However, I also am an independent contractor with a couple of agencies from Albuquerque and Santa Fe, and I work with them to help coach new people who want to become educators and all across the state. So when that money is released, we're still working on last year's budget, but when that money is released, it'll be released and it will go to early childhood education. Child care assistance. It'll go to the wage and career ladder. It'll go to its appropriate groups. And then it'll start being distributed at that time.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Does the opportunity to take part in this program extend to in-home daycares or just daycares that are at a center?
No, it's for licensed daycares, home and in centers and registered homes.
Huh.
So no one is excluded. We can't exclude people. We really are encouraging people to be licensed. However, they can start out registered with the hopes of becoming licensed.
So it seems like that might be a potential avenue for providing more spaces for children, as if people who perhaps have had children of their own decide to become registered child care providers out of their homes.
That is correct.
Yeah, I would think to get to Universal, they're going to have all kinds of different approaches. And so, yeah. Can both of you talk just a little bit about both the research and your own personal experience as to the advantages of putting children into a group early childhood setting as opposed to, you know, the traditional stay at home and I which isn't even an option, I know, for a lot of people, but you know, it is in terms of a society, it's been a fairly big switch from what typically happened when I was growing up. And so what does the research show on that, and what has your own experience been on that?
I'm not really sure of the research part.
Fair enough.
I've been in child care for 24 years.
Yeah, so you've got your own research.
And in my case, when I was growing up, I was a latchkey kid. I could come home with a key and keep it moving, and snack would be ready for me, do my homework. Like, I had rules and regulations. Nowadays, unfortunately, parents have to work. It's not an option, and then it has to be both parents. So they do have to be out of the home. Now, I believe as a child care provider that a child being at home can get in a lot of stuff that they'll have no business getting into. However, being in a home or a center-based child care, they're with other children. They learn from other children. If they're not meeting the milestones that they're supposed to be, kids are very much followers and like to model their learning. I think that it helps children, especially when they're very, very young, to be able to collaborate with other children and play with other children. I know that some people hear the word play and go, oh, that's all they do all day is play. But if you don't have anybody to play with, then how do you learn to play? And so, and that goes through the ranks. I know in my child care alone, I have infants all the way to 12-year-olds. Usually about 10 or 11, they're able to take the bus home to their house. Their parents are allowed them to do that. So, but my kids all grow up together, and they kind of sort of move together throughout my daycare. They may get a different teacher, but they all know all my teachers because I have a home daycare, and I'm very small. I only have 16 kids on a roll. So my kids just kind of moved through the age group, and so they all know each other since they were born. And having those kind of connections is really help the brain grows better instead of them being home alone.
And MJ, can
what
you?
What about you, MJ?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the same thing. I believe that social learning, like they call it social emotional learning for a reason. Like through being social, you learn this like really important factor of emotional regulation, how to voice your emotions even to other people, which like something that you carry that with you your entire life. Like that's how we like are able to be human beings and work in a world and like work together as like a community. And the early education is really just building that community early on so that these kids are able to go out into the world and like be confident and independent individuals. I will share like a quick little like personal story from one of my pre-K classes. I had this child who was very emotionally unregulated at the beginning of the year. Any small thing would happen, and immediately they would like throw a chair or scream at another child or scream at a teacher. And it was something that happened right when he turned four. And eventually grew up to now love school, is enjoying being in elementary school, and doesn't have any of those issues because as a community, we worked together to help this child regulate and like learn how to control their emotions. And it was like a really beautiful thing. And that happens with every kid. Even if it's like not as on intense of a scale, but yeah, I think it's probably one of the, it's a building block that's important for every child to experience and to learn just how to be out in the world.
You
can never start too early, I guess.
Can you tell me what kinds of like, kindergarten readiness activities you might undertake in a childcare setting?
Yeah, so we obviously, there are moments where we have to have the kids sit still, mainly focusing on just like listening to instructions. Kindergarten doesn't really look the same as it used to. It's like semi-rigorous for like such young children. They're expected to sit in their desks and do work for like a couple, like an hour or two a day. And they can't talk to each other. They don't have as much time to just like play around in the classroom. And so we really try to focus on teaching them how to learn, how to listen, how to sit still when they're asked to, and mainly just working on listening to directions.
I'm curious, is there, and it may not exist yet, but is the plan to eventually have like a statewide registry? If I'm a parent and I'm looking for childcare, is there anything that exists now that is anything like that? And if not, is that the hope that there eventually will be?
I don't know the answer to that question. I've never, in none of the meetings that I've been with,
right,
they've talked about a registry, yeah.
Okay. So I guess...
Yeah, I don't think I've heard anything about that.
Let me ask it another way. What would I do if I was a parent and I had a child that I was interested in enrolling? Is there a central location, or do you just have to get online and start looking?
Oh, no. The Early Childhood Education Department has their own website.
Okay.
And you can go there to do everything that you need to do, apply for child care assistance. You can also go there and find child cares. There is a website that you can go and, like I said earlier, plug in your, like, what area you want to be in. And then if you wanted a 4-star, 5-star, 3-star program, and then all the daycares that are in that zip code will pop up. And okay. Then they can just start going down the line, yes.
What is the difference between a 3-, 4-, and 5-star program?
So I've been here for 13 years, but it's a rating that the state has come up with. And there are things that we have to do to make those ratings. So everyone who comes into the home daycares or at centers start at a 2-star, and mm-hmm. then they work their way up. And then it's just to give quality, more quality to the children, more quality to the work that we're doing, that if someone needs to come in and look at our paperwork, they'll go, oh yeah, she's a 5-star program because she's doing all these things with her children.
Does that also entail on-site inspections, or is it just a paperwork thing?
No, they for the focus, they come out once a year, and this is just they come out to just make sure everything is looking great, and then they give you another year.
And it occurs to me that we are going to be talking in the next half hour with the local director here of the Boys and Girls Club, who they're trying to do the same thing you do. Can you talk a little bit about, do you have coordination with the local school districts, with local organizations like the Boys and Girls Club? Any kind of collaborations like that typically in the daycares?
For my home daycares, I'm also a New Mexico pre-K teacher.
Okay.
I have my bachelor's degree and my master's degree in early childhood education. And so when we're applying for those funds, I have to collaborate with my neighborhood. So I have collaboration through all the schools that my kids all go to. Some of my kids go to different schools, not elementary and middle school, but like different elementary schools and different middle schools. And so I have collaboration with them. So if I can send people to them if their pre-K class is not full or vice versa. And we work together as a team. But that is something that we have to, that's in our plans when we, to make sure that all of our classrooms are full.
And I'm just curious, you may not know the answer to this, but I know that there is DD preschool for children with special needs, but are they also, like, do they also fall under the child care new legislation, and are daycares required to provide services for children with special needs?
If you have the qualifications, they take on that responsibility. Some of the daycare providers or child care workers do not have special education behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I also, when I got my master's degree, took special education because I wanted to, I find that a lot of more children are more needs of special needs than not. So like in my daycare right now, I have two, well, they were nonverbal, but they're now starting to talk and be sociable with the other kids in the classroom. Just like MJ shared her story, these children started in November and September of last year with no words at all. Not hello, no goodbye, nothing. And now they're being able to communicate what they want. Not conversationally yet. We're still working on that. But before, it was a lot of frustration because they couldn't verbalize what they wanted to say. As we do, most places have teachers that have education background with special education. And so those two children that I have are in DDPRE, and they come, one comes in the morning, right, and then he leaves and goes to DDPRE, and the other child is in DDPRE right now, and he'll come here in the afternoon, and he'll be in my pre-K, and I will continue to work with him and his teacher, his DDPRE teacher at the elementary school that he's at.
Do you have the, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but for the at-risk children who are 0 to 3, do like speech pathologists or speech therapists come to your child care to provide services, or like have you ever had?
I do.
We also do.
Yeah. I'm curious, Valeria, as somebody who's done this for 24 years, do you stay in touch at all with the kids after they leave your care? And what changes have you seen in 24 years of doing this?
Well, I'm originally from Virginia, and so I moved here in 2013, but I started my daycare in 2001. So all those kids are either graduating high school or getting married or having kids, and they are just blossoming. I had a little boy who started my daycare just before he turned 2, and he wasn't talking either, but he couldn't hear. And I picked that up right away, like the first day that he was with me. And now he's a musical protege on his way to college. He just graduated this past May, last year, May. So, yes, I keep, and thank goodness for Facebook, because I'm able to see my family from Virginia, to see how they've been blossoming and growing up and getting accepted into colleges all across the country.
That's lovely.
And in terms of the changes, I would think more acceptance now than there was 24 years ago. People, better understanding of the need. Is that fair to say? That was to Valeria.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, because I've had, even when I was in Virginia, there were people who were brought their children to me, and they said, "Well, they have fragile X," and I'm like, "Ooh!" And I didn't have my degree back then, and I'm like, "Well, okay, so tell me what that is." And then the parent told me, and I said, "Okay, well, I'll research it and see what I can do." And at that time, I went back to school. So I learned a lot about how to take care of that child, because she was in, her body bones were not structured enough or strong enough for me to hold her. And she couldn't walk and she couldn't eat. She didn't have she couldn't eat as well. So she had to eat soft foods. So I feel like for me, it's always a challenge for me to go research what a child may or may not have if they're diagnosed or undiagnosed, to try to help that child to be the best person that they can be.
Well, I guess the point I was trying to get to there, and we're out of time, but there was a time, I think, when we kind of shamed mothers, especially a little bit, for taking children to childcare. And I hope that has changed. Those attitudes have changed.
Oh no, it's changed.
Yeah,
it has. Definitely.
Okay, well, I want to thank you both so much for joining us this morning. Once again, before we leave, do you have the website, or just the Early Childhood Education Department website is where people should go for more information?
Yeah, it's ECECD.org.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you both so much for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.